All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's enter the last round here. And I hope everybody's back from our little break. And we do still have some important points I want to get across to you. So please do me the favor and give me your full attention, because as you know, that's ultimately the currency which we deal with. And this is what we are doing in the last part of today. Looking through your notes here, one of the things you want to have is more case studies of real companies. And I know that is always a demand you have. So in the remaining minutes, I can't give you anything in depth. What my friend Ming Yao has prepared for you, however, is for a few companies I've been working with. Brief summary of what the points are. And I'm happy, again, to talk in more detail about any of those things. But in the interest of time right now, what I want to do is I want to just show you what these cases are. There's no super overlap with any of the companies. Otherwise, I've booked one of them. But it gives you a feeling of how the consumer data revolution actually is impacting companies, some of them which you might know. So these are all people who have paid me for that, and I know what I can say and I know what I can't say. So don't ask me for secrets. If you know, I won't tell you, I won't tell you. So Amazon, of course, you saw some examples already. Alibaba is, as you know, the largest B2B company in the world, China-based. And Ma Yun, Jack Ma, he asked me, I think 2004, to work with his team on getting the team to become a very quantitative team. He had a very, very, very good quantitative sales team, but no idea what was really happening on the website. So the great CFO they have really was driving that process, and it was about measuring pretty much everything which is going on. Why? Because ultimately, they were selling those days, 8,000 different companies were selling scooters. So the problem of relevance, which of those companies should we show on the first page, two, three, four pages? Because it is not easy to know who do you want to do deals with. So that was really where the consumer data revolution, in this case, actually the business data revolution had hit him, by getting people to provide more from this low margin business of getting $1,000 a year for being certified with a gold pass, to now having Alipay, Alimama, having, of course, Taobao, which has pushed out eBay. And it's all really based on quantifying the company, plus getting comments from users. Traditional retail, I've mentioned Best Buy, which I think is one of the greatest success stories of how to really change the thinking of a company, how to get them, a very traditional company in the Midwest, it's where you do the PhD, right? Having them change to actually become a very forward-looking company and getting 100,000 people on board. Every employee of Best Buy has the ability to have his own shop. So if somebody is really an expert in something, he can put together a little shop and sell, for a commission, sell actually Best Buy products on his little webpage. Pretty big change. The other example here is a company called Otto. Mentioned before, that relationship started a year plus epsilon ago when they came out for a week, top board members, and said, wait, show us around for a week in California, what's new? Out of that came a VC fund they started, which was just announced recently. And what they really learned is the importance of social commerce. That was actually, I remember we went to Facebook, the early days of Facebook page, they just launched a platform. People were very naive at Facebook about selling stuff. Those guys, on the other hand, do know how to sell stuff. Interesting conversation, Smash.com came out of it, a website where, for instance, you don't know, I mean, for those of you who wear ties, you don't know whether this tie or maybe that tie would look better on you. So you can just drag those two ties into a little box, and then social commerce, ask your friends, hey, which of those two ties should I buy? So you can have the conversation, again, bringing people into the site. More interesting for ladies than for guys, it turns out. Airlines. So travel is something which is very close to my heart. Last but not least, last week I spent more than 30 hours in airplanes, so it's something which I really know a little bit about. So I did the e-commerce strategy for Lufthansa and for Swiss. Swiss International Airlines, was bankrupt 8-9 years ago, is now, and I have the utmost admiration for their CEO, is now the most profitable airline in Europe. twice the profit margin compared to the second one. So forget about the cheap carriers. If you think you read in the papers that they make lots of money, Swiss, for some way, managed to just do an amazing job there. And part of it is that they pushed really stuff onto the web. You have a field where you can fill out how you actually know what you request. The agent who you might be calling has access to the same field, and you might say, you know, I'm going on a honeymoon. Can you please, you know, upgrade me? And then it turns out maybe it's your daughter you're going that trip with. So that thing with the honeymoon didn't quite fly. So it's creating transparency. Or some customers are just unreasonable. So Swiss is considering, in when you call the call center saying, hey, we are an honest company. We are a premium carrier. If you're talking, you want the MP3 of our conversation, be our guest. Tell us we have your email address. On the push of a button, you have the record of our conversation. We have nothing to hide. We are accountable. Very interesting. I mean, would SQ do that? Hotels, I've worked with Agoda, a Singaporean Thai company, and very interesting, what they do really well is understand the data the consumer is giving them in the search and base their pricing on that. Secondly, what they really understand well is creating a relevance function. If you enter Bangkok Hotel, which of the, you know, hundreds of hotels in Bangkok should they be following on the first page? Not, as you might think, the one with the largest profit margin. Because that might not be the one which makes the customer the happiest. The customer might be doing one deal with them. And yes, if you live in the world of transaction economics, you would be optimizing it. But we are moving from transaction economics to relationship economics. So what you're ultimately interested in when you are dealing with end users is not making the quick buck now and pissing off the consumer, but in the long term, being able to actually have a relationship. The example I gave you before was the example for Amazon supporting decision processes. Ultimately, it's more profitable for Amazon.com than just pushing some book down people's throat or wherever you push things. A loyalty program is just a very recent project. Very, very interesting. Consumers give lots of data. And I don't know what Chris Flyer knows about you, but Virgin, and Singapore Airlines, I think, owns 49% of Virgin. Virgin knows a damn lot about me. For instance, a Virgin under cost cutting, actually, I tend to fly them between Los Angeles and San Francisco, allows you, quote unquote, to figure out on your touch screen what you want to drink. You swipe your credit card, and so far the process, no human is involved. And then the lady, the flight attendant, she knows exactly what you need, or the flight attendant, and just gives you your champagne. Now, of course, they know who is sitting in that seat, and they know what your drinking preferences are. And so next time, they can say, hey, you know, I know you had 3 champagnes last time. Let me give you one for free as you're just entering the frame. Think about how hard that is for people to memorize the Shaoji as an SQ. Oh, would you like your champagne today? I don't know whether they do this with frequent flyers or not, but it's much easier to have a computer actually get the data from you. Your data, you are showing this to them implicitly. Second thing is, Virgin allows you to chat. So now that gets interesting. That guy over there in 12A, you know, you're just chatting about. And now in the future, don't get too excited about it. So in the future now, they know your preferences, who you like to chat to. And if you're really a frequent flyer, that might very well, for that long distance flight, those 12 hours, be a chance for you to actually get to meet somebody with quality time beforehand. So loyalty programs, I was going to show you Doppler as an example here, which is one way of showing your preferences public, no possible in terms of time. In the mobile space, Nokia is thinking very deeply in Finland about who owns the data the consumer is producing. Should Nokia have access to the data, not only to sell you the next mobile phone, but also to sell you other services, music services? My view is that ultimately, the phone calls will be free. But carriers need to think very hard. How can they make money with other things which people use? Software, Looped is a cool company in California, which for GPS-enabled phones allows you to specify who you might, you know, be interested in meeting, and then you go to a room and, you know, you have your slider and see the trade-off. You're interested in that age group, but unfortunately that age group isn't there. But if you're a little bit flexible there, these are the 3 people in this order, relevance function once again, you should be meeting. Think if you had this at MRT. And finally, I've worked with MySpace on monetization, and I've worked with the Conversation Group in San Francisco on trying to understand how to measure social media and how to actually influence social media. So in all these cases, I would be very happy to spend a couple of hours on all these examples individually. We won't have the time, but this gives you a feeling, and I put a document which Ming-Yao wrote up just out of his good heart, thinking, you know, this might be interesting for the people here to give to them. So I promise to put that up. Marketing Web 2.0, our last topic for today, has about 10 slides, something like this. I didn't count exactly. I threw a bunch of them out already to get through before lunch. So where do people go for information, besides the Straits Times, that is? Well, 20 years ago, it was the produced news. Lee Kuan Yew saying something, he publicized opinion, and you go and listen to him. Okay. 10 years ago, it was search. You remember the days when there was Google and Yahoo? That's where you went for information. But search has a problem, that you only find what you actually are looking for already. And in some cases, very, very, very hard to find something. I remember in the SARS years here, actually somebody told me that Singapore received more donations from individuals than in any other year. So which I thought was a super interesting point. That in the year where the economy was hit hard, people gave more money to the government than in any other year. And I tend to, when I use facts, I want to verify that fact. I'm sure I spent 2 hours trying to find the right documents and I failed. So sometimes you have simple questions like, you know, that's not a hard question, but it's virtually impossible to find this on the web. So search is not perfect, and we're getting good at what's called Google grunting, in grunting in the sort of individual keywords as we talk to Google. Now, what's interesting, much more interesting than that, is discovery, where we find something or someone who we don't know we are looking for. And actually, the interesting thing is most people don't know what they want. Lots of studies where, for instance, lots of studies show people really don't know what they're looking for. So the big space where we can use consumer-generated content, and that's why I spent the time before to showing you how Delicious works, is to get people to actually discover things they wouldn't have known to expect. And how does this primarily work? For me, as I said, as a people person, it's about social networks. It's about via the people you're connected to in some way. I gave you the example of the ties, the two ties at smash.com of trying to get into your network. Another example was Amazon Share the Love, the social network value that if you buy a book, after you bought the book, you said, hey, now remember, you have a friend who might be interested in that book, and you say, sure, here's his email, and then you get 10% discount, he gets 10% of the book within a week, and Amazon sold another book, and maybe even acquired another customer. So these are interesting incentive devices. So conversational marketing is really what this marketing Web 2.0 is an important component of. And now let's pause for a moment and ask, where are the conversations happening? So for most of you who think about your marketing departments, it is, well, a conversation with your fund manager. That's the letter Fidelity sends me once a month. I've never met that dude, let alone have had a conversation with him. And they claim I have a conversation, but bullshit. They're lying to me. They call it a conversation. It's not a conversation. So this downcasting, it's not even broadcast, downcasting here, is pretty much what people now sort of call the empire without clothes. And don't call it a conversation. Don't say that Hannah H. from S. thinks, oh, this company is the best company ever. Bullshit, you know. Let me hear what the real voices are. So the first thing a company needs to do is listen to where the conversations are happening. And the conversations about your mobile phones, about the carriers, are not happening between the company and you, only a small fraction. I mean, when you're unhappy, the conversations are happening between consumers. So the first step in conversation marketing or in social media analysis is to actually find out what are those conversations. And we said before, they are not representative, but we are able to sort of see how do they change over time, are there new issues coming in, and examples would be, I'll give you three examples. One, a company called Kryptonite, which makes locks, had a video up on the internet where it shows how to pick those locks. And they said, oh, bullshit, we don't need to address it. Boom, stock price fell by a few percent just because some guy put some video up how to pick a lock. Second example, a company called Walmart had people driving from parking lot, Walmart parking lot, interviewing happy Walmart employees who just said, you know, it's just so wonderful to work at Walmart, all these great benefits and the atmosphere. They were are you sure you're not getting paid by Walmart? We would never be paid by Walmart. And then it came out that they actually were paid by Walmart. Embarrassing, embarrassing, embarrassing. Third example is a year ago, the CEO of a company called Whole Foods, great green company, good food. Interesting enough, the real estate price in the blocks where there is a Whole Foods increased by roughly 10%. Because you don't have to stuff your own pantry. They do it for you. They decided to acquire a Boulder company, and there were 1,000 negative blog messages about that lousy Boulder company. You know, this is bad, and this is bad, and here's a picture of the cockroaches. And the only embarrassing thing was, it turned out they only came from one IP address, from one computer address, which was the computer of the CEO of the company which was trying to buy them. Question, when we talk about ethics, would you fire the guy? He wasn't fired. So then, once you understand what these conversations are, then it's a question, and this is sort of a strategic thing, I think, in marketing. How do you actually deal with companies? How do you influence those conversations? Which one do you address? How do you address them? So ultimately, the question that of trust. Do we trust, who do we trust? And it turns out these are numbers from America. I don't know how it is in Singapore, but it turns out that 70% of Americans say they distrust big companies. Only 5%. 1 in 20 say that companies do right by their consumers. That's pretty sad. 14% believe information passed to them by government advertising. 4% of them trust the HMOs. I gave you the example of that girl who was anorexic beforehand. 9% trust pharma, 9% trust car manufacturers, 12% trust telcos. So then the question is, what are the sources of influence? What are the sources of recommendation? And of course, the answer, not surprising to you anymore, is the consumer data revolution. So how does it work? The powerful thing is that social recommendations, as I gave this example with the book you bought and then you met with your friend, social recommendations work well because context, content, and recipient are chosen by you. The content is that book. The context is the line you add, why he should be reading it, and you don't send this to anybody, but you send it to that person who you think, that recipient who might be interested in this given point in time in that book. Very different from, you know, happy smiley faces of cute people telling you that if you buy that element, then you'll get married happily or something. And here are more examples. The baseline is that social recommendations, user-generated content recommendations, are about a factor of 10, a factor of 10, more effective than what companies can do. In the case when you take out the individual person making the recommendation, just use a social graph. I showed you the company which analyzed my telco behavior before. One company in the United States, which actually is a telecommunication carrier itself, did an experiment, large-scale experiment on, you know, millions and millions of customers, where they, with a deep experience in targeted marketing, built sophisticated segmentation models based on the experience, based on their intuitions, and of course on their data. But the data were not the social graph data, but the data were demographic data, geographic data, loyalty data, and that stuff people probably using SAS actually built. And the result was that we normalized that to a factor of 1. 0.28% was the purchasing rate. And then a colleague of mine at NYU said, okay, let's do an experiment. Rather than doing these complicated models, let's just simply send an invitation to buy the product to those people who make phone calls to people who have already bought the product. And it turned out that it was a factor of 4.8. Big factor. 4.8 more of what they got in selling this product just based on this one social element of who is talking to whom. So that is real money. A factor of 4.8 is something which is not easy to achieve. I want to end our talk here with a slide on what I call WeBusiness, and that's the company you mentioned beforehand, called GetSatisfaction.com. Customer service is the new marketing. So you all have customer service in some way. How can we use our consumers, our customers, to actually help us with our customer service? And here is an example company, maybe 5 people. Again, no involvement with them. I just want to show it to you because I think it's not irrelevant to understand what they're doing. And if you go to getsatisfaction.com here, then it says people-powered customer service. you enter on Get Satisfaction the name of a company or name of a product you're interested in. It will come up eventually. And then it allows you to ask any question, whatever might not be working with your product. And for instance, in case of my mobile phone, it's a BlackBerry phone. I have T-Mobile as a carrier in the United States. And here I'm using whatever is roaming on it. My email wasn't pushed. Gee, do I call Singtel? Do I call M1? Do I call T-Mobile? Do I call BlackBerry? Unclear to me. Because everybody will say, oh, not my problem. Talk to the other party. So it's pretty hard. So here are examples where you can, for 6,800 companies, just simply say, this is my problem, this is exactly what I have, and you push it out to those companies which are involved in. And the interesting thing is that not primarily customer service representatives, but primarily other people are willing to produce the data, to produce the answers to solve your problem. Now, what's the difference to BBS? The difference is that this here is much more structured, and I won't have time to show it to you, but I invite you to look at it yourself. So once the problem has been solved, others find it easily, and then here on the right-hand side, add your company in 3 minutes or less, then if you're an employee of the company, you actually can help out there, and if you have an email address, which is whatever, at Dell.com, for instance, then you get verified as indeed being an employee. They send you an email, you click on it, and now you have both regular people who answer problems and you have employees of the companies. One of the companies which has probably the worst customer service in the United States, no, not United Airlines, is a company called the, actually, I don't have them, the company which does cable. It's Comcast. So Comcast is known of being really bad. So when you go to Comcast, here, of course, they have, as it should be, in a nice Ajax way, right away command completion. You go to Comcast, and then you can ask your questions, and you see what questions other people have asked. So for instance, here, I'll just quickly look at one topic which was here recently done. You can, for instance, good for praise or company updates or discussions, whatever you want. I hate Comcast, okay? There are 10. So what's that? So here, what people say, and then there is an employee who then replies. So Comcast actually is present in this social media, and this. This employee called whatever Melissa, they all look cupcakes to me. That employee called Melissa, she actually responds for that. Comcast claims, and I have no first-hand experience there, but Comcast claims that that makes an enormous ROI on the employees. They have a couple of employees whose job is to be on Get Satisfaction. Much higher ROI than people in the call centers who, you know, don't really know what to say if somebody complains and shouts at them. Much more material we could talk about, but I think in summary, this is all we managed to do a reasonable job in our few hours on this Thursday morning here in Singapore. What it remains for me is to thank you for your great, great energy here of working with me so well, and I hope we'll have a good lunch. Again, if you want to say some closing words or tell us where the forks are or whatever, I hand it over to you.
School of Information Services, the Center for Marketing Excellence and Executive Education. We have a little gift. And all those other titles in there. So thank you, Andreas, for this very, very much.
Thank you.
Appreciated it. And we now move on. That's yours.
No, that's to everybody. These are the names list, the name list of the attendees. So you can continue to network here. Everybody gets a list of the names of the people who are here.
Right, sorry. So after we now have lunch and enjoy for lunch with each other and continue to share the ideas that Andreas has shared with you today. Great, thanks very much.
All right, thank you.